This is McGuire on the Wire, brought to you by McGuire Sponsel. We are a national consulting firm aiming to provide facts, advice, and updates on the ever-changing world of tax law. This podcast will give you base-level information as well as high-level thought leadership on how to navigate these technical disciplines. At McGuire Sponsel, we provide unique services to our clients using an old-school, hands-on approach that is deeply respected within the CPA industry. Now stick around and listen to one of our experts. We're glad you're here.
Hello, and thank you for joining us. Today, I want to talk about grants, and specifically taxable grants. Not just really grants, but any type of taxable payment that someone gets to help pay for a development project. So let's talk about grants and then talk about how some of these other things come up. Specifically, I want to talk about how grants were changed under the TCJA, or the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 had this provision in it that stated that any contribution by a government entity or civic group is to be included in gross income. That's under Section 118. And this was a change under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So what's happening is we see a lot of credits and incentives going to businesses for the development or bringing new jobs, building new facilities, et cetera. And we hear about it all the time. I mean, we have a practice here at McGuire Sponsel that works in it. And the general public has heard about it as well. They've heard about it when we states and municipalities bidding for companies like Amazon, or like Google, to set up headquarters in their location. And Amazon's probably the big one everybody heard about a couple of years ago. They were really putting this out to bid and trying to get different municipalities to pull them in. And those state and local municipalities do this through a variety of different things. They might do this through tax abatements. They might do that through land that they contribute. There's a number of different things they could do. Certain states, that comes in the way of a grant. Now, the problem with that is that's going to affect taxable income. And that's not... Grants aren't the only way that they do this, that grants coming from the state, I should say, aren't the only way that this happens. This could happen in a number of different ways. We used to see this a lot with grants coming from utilities. So an electrical utility might put a grant out there for someone to build a certain type of power plant or something else, or to make their building more energy efficient. We also saw a very similar situation. It's not a grant, so to say, but think of a car dealership. When Ford dealerships were renovating their dealerships, they might get a check to help offset some of the cost from Ford corporate. And that might come in the form of different ways. I know some of the dealership or the manufacturing groups were distributing money and saying, okay, if you spend $3 million renovating your dealership, we're going to say $2 million of it is to get on this new standard floor plan, this new design criteria that we're looking at, and we'll give you 50% of that money. And they push that through as a payment out of their advertising budget. So it came through as an advertising expense, but the company's putting this in as a capital event. Now, in general, when we're talking about grants, a lot of times people don't worry about them because they're used to offset the hiring of people or training grants, for example. So you're spending an immediately deductible expense to offset your grant. So let's say you get a training grant of $10,000, but you're going to have $10,000 worth of training expenses to offset that. So it's not going to affect your taxable income. But if we consider a project where, let's say, a $50 million project where you've got $10 million in state grants coming in to help fund a capital project, that's different. Because if you don't do anything, that $50 million capital project, let's say you've got 20% of that's land or $10 million. And the other $40 million is associated with depreciable assets. And those are put in building or 39-year category. And you're only depreciating $1 million a year, approximately. And then what's going to happen is that $10 million in state grants is going to drastically increase your tax rate. This comes really to the forefront with certain projects that are designed to really be looking at what's going to happen in the future. Let's say you're building a port facility, and that port facility is designed based on what the expected growth is over the next 10, 15 years. And the state wants to put grant money into it, but they want it to be a private development. Now, that private development might not be profitable till 10 years in the future, except they get all this grant money, and that makes that first year hugely profitable on a federal income tax definition, but not necessarily on a book definition. So it creates this issue where that first year, potentially, you have large amounts of taxable income. Now, what do we do about it? Well, that's really where it's important that the incentive people have access to federal tax people that understand things like cost segregation and bonus depreciation. So one of the ways that we've been seeing this a lot, and we've got actually a couple projects we've been working on right now that are heavily dependent on these state grant programs. And what they're doing is they're doing cost segregation studies to maximize the amount of short-lived assets. So let me explain. Take that $50 million project I mentioned earlier. And 20% of it is associated with land. So really, we're talking about a $40 million development budget. And they get a $10 million grant. Now, if they do nothing, that $10 million is taxable. It's going to push all the partners in their LLC into the top marginal tax rate, et cetera, et cetera. So this could end up being a big issue for them. Now, let's just assume that this is a development project to build a big manufacturing facility, let's say. And we go in and we do a cost segregation study on it. And we say, okay, of this project, 15% of it, of that $40 million, is not building, but is things associated with maybe it's land improvements, maybe it's parking. It could be anything associated with the site. So that's $6 million. Then we go in and we say, okay, another 10% of it is associated with personal property. So it could be decorative lighting systems. It could be wiring for the equipment. I remember I said it's a manufacturing facility. So it's wiring and plumbing systems for the equipment. It could be specialty foundation systems. Anything that's specialized to the equipment. This is what a cost segregation study does. So at this point, we move 25% of this building to shorter lived assets. So that's that $10 million. Now, what happens is under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, in addition to making that grant taxable, what they also did is they created 100% bonus depreciation for things that are eligible. So this will mean that you get that $10 million of shorter lived assets that we recognized, either 15 or 5-year assets, land improvements and personal property. Those are all eligible for bonus depreciation. So now you've created $10 million worth of immediate deductions that will offset your grant proceeds. Now, this is going to become even more critical over the next couple of years as states and municipalities look to recover from the COVID-19 crisis. And they're looking at, do we offer grant programs? Do we offer these other incentives to get companies to move their operations out of where they are and into our municipality? It's going to come true as we see people looking to, are we going to have different incentives for manufacturing PPE in a state or moving supply chains around and getting them in that location. So this is going to be critical. And this is nothing new. I mentioned earlier that car dealerships went through this. So car dealerships went through this, like I said, when, now this wasn't a state and local grant, so it's a little bit different, but the mathematics work the same way, is that when, let's say, GM was forcing a Chevy dealership to renovate, they would give a portion of them a portion of the money, and they pushed it through as an advertising expense. And so the car dealerships got used to using cost segregation and other methodology to limit the tax event that created. Now, it gets even better if the business is willing to do some type of retrofit. And what do I mean by that? So let's say that grant, that $50 million development project I was mentioning earlier, the one I kind of made up. So instead of buying $10 million worth of land and putting $40 million into it, They buy a $10 million existing building and plan on spending $40 million renovating it. Same budget for them. But what ends up happening is there's also this provision under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was adjusted under the CARES Act that came out in 2020, that made QIP, or Qualified Improvement Property, eligible for bonus depreciation. Qualified Improvement Property is any non-structural asset to the interior of a building if it's placed in service after the building's placed in service. So that would include, in a renovation of this $10 million building I just bought, it would include lighting systems, it would include painting the interior, it would include the build-out of office space, as long as it's not structural what I'm doing. So a large amount of that retrofit on the interior would also be eligible for bonus depreciation. So that would further incentivize people to write those assets off and would create some deductions. Now, it's important that people balance that with those grants they're getting, but it's a way to offset a lot of what we're seeing. The reason I point this out is what we've seen is that a lot of specialty providers, whether it be on the cost segregation side, which is my background, or on the credit incentive side, which we have a number of people here at McGuire Sponsor that work on. And if you go back through our podcast catalog, you can find me talking to some of our incentive team, including Ben Worrell. But very rarely do they work in conjunction with each other. And it's critical that in these situations that people are working together to talk about the intersection of these different provisions. Because the problem is, if we just talk about the grant programs, we don't let people know that, yes, you might be getting a $10 million grant, but that's going to push your partners in your LLC into the top marginal tax rate. And they might be paying on that 30, 40% tax. So that $10 million they're getting might only effectively put $6 or $7 million into the project. Now, at the same time, if I come in on the depreciation side and ignore the grant proceeds, I might come in and say, okay, this project is going to take 4 or 5 years before it's profitable, so don't worry about the tax provisions at this point in time. And so it's critical that we all work together on these situations. Now, some people might be listening to this and going, well, how do I get some of those grant proceeds? And that's something you really want to talk to our incentives team, and I can, and or go back through some of our old podcast catalogs to hear about. But really what's critical there is that before projects move forward, we're getting involved in looking at what's going on. Now, we don't know what states are going to do, what municipalities are going to do after we come out of the COVID-19 crisis, but we do know that some states are probably going to double down on incentives, and some states, because of the fact that their revenues are reduced, are probably going to struggle with some of these. And it's really going to depend on how forward-looking they are. And so, but it's critical as we look at these things to understand how the tax implications work around it. Now, the other thing that a good quality incentives team can do is move some of these grant programs into different things, tax abatements, or other types of incentives can be used to make sure that it's not taxable. When we're talking about these types of incentives, we're primarily talking about grants that are taxable. There are a number of other things that could be done to reduce that tax liability, and that's where a quality incentives team can really help you. Because there's most of the incentives that we see, whether it's state tax savings or other things, are not taxable. It's only these grant programs. So a quality incentives team will really look at it and balance those two. Because it could be, let's say on my example earlier of a $50 million project that gets a $10 million in state grants, it could be that they restructure some of it to non-refundable tax credits, deductions, abatements, exemptions, et cetera, and then only leave a portion of it in the grant bucket. And then the grant bucket can be offset by depreciation or something else. So it's important that we look at those, but also understand where the business is in that regard. Hopefully people understood this. If you have any questions about this or anything else that you hear in one of our podcasts, please reach out to myself or anyone at McGuire Sponsor. We'd be happy to discuss it. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to McGuire on the Wire. Have a question from today's episode or interested in our team covering another topic? Reach out to us at McGuire on the Wire at McGuireSponsor.com.